A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Social media is a great mover for social justice when it's employed properly. So there's a lot of stuff you should care about. So make sure you also put that type of stuff on your feed too.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Hello and welcome to It's Complicated with me, Tanya Gooden, the podcast to help you untangle your relationship with your phone.
Because we've all been pushed around.
This is a podcast about learning to live healthily and happily with technology and the digital world, and understanding why sometimes it's so hard to do. Because if we learn how to step away from our phones more, we'll be learning how to step in more to our lives, improving our relationships, our work, and our health.
Because we've all been swept away, yeah.
I'm your host, Tanya Gooden, author and founder of digital wellbeing movement Time to Log Off. Each week I'll be asking a new guest what they've learned about the relationship with the tiny tyrant in their pocket, their smartphone. So when I was reading the list of achievements for my guests today, I think it was one of those watershed moments when you finally realise, A, you're old, and B, you've achieved absolutely nothing with your life. Because at the age of 23, Grace Beverly is running 3 multi-million pound fitness businesses. She's just been listed in the Forbes 30 Under 30. She actually won the NatWest Young Entrepreneur of the Year while she was a student at Oxford University. And doing all of that, I've just betrayed one of the kind of biggest wows about her, which is she did all of that while being a student. So I was really, really keen to chat to her to find out how on earth she's managed to achieve all of that at her age, where she gets all her energy from, and if she had any tips for the rest of us. I so enjoyed talking to her. And I think she's an absolutely fascinating woman with a lot to say. And I think you're really, really going to enjoy this chat. So, hi, Grace. Lovely to chat to you.
Thank you for having me.
It's so good to have you on. I was just looking back at my previous list of guests, and I think you're the youngest guest I've had on the podcast. But also, I think I don't want to diss any of my previous guests, but possibly the most successful, definitely one of the most successful.
Wow, got so many accolades in one sentence.
So, I mean, I just, you know, I was kind of in awe when I was reading your list of achievements. You've set up 3 separate brands, a couple of digital businesses. You know, the whole premise of this podcast is really to look at our relationship with the digital world. And I kind of felt that you, almost more than anyone else I've been speaking to, really gets that, because this has been your life for so long. So I wanted to know, how did it all start? When was the moment when you thought, actually, I can make a business out of this, I can make my life out of what I'm doing online?
I think it was probably a few different stages, because I think when you're on social media, you probably, there are such different types of businesses. As in, I would say I was a business, you know, even when I was just posting online, and posting, you know, an output of content that is technically a business and you've got an audience and all of that. But I definitely didn't think of it as one. Kind of more thought of it as a job without the business entity. But then I'd say it was probably even about 6 months to a year into my first business before I even thought, oh, okay, this is a kind of direct-to-consumer brand in the same way as, you know, a lot of other businesses are online at the moment. So I think there are probably a few different stages of my kind of recognition of that. But there have definitely been a few kind of different points down the way where I've thought, yeah, this is, you know, it's a way I can make a living. It's a way I can create a business, all of these various different kind of aspects of it.
And you started with YouTube, didn't you? Or did you start with Instagram? What was the kind of, what was your first moment? You probably can't even remember, but what was your first kind of post when you thought, this is me?
It's so ridiculous. So I started on Instagram. I started, it was literally just because I wanted to get into fitness and I could never stick to anything. So I started up a secret Instagram page, spent 3 hours blocking like 400 people I knew. Didn't do it under my name, didn't show my face until I had 10,000 followers. It was private for a while. And it was kind of just so not what it's become. So I definitely remember that. And then I probably about 7 months later, I changed it to be based on my name because I was like, okay, this is pretty clear now. And then I started, I guess, kind of growing it from there. And I started YouTube a year or two later. And I only started that because you couldn't upload more than 15-second videos on Instagram. And I wanted to work videos. So it wasn't even, oh, hey, I want to do YouTube. I didn't even watch YouTube. I didn't really understand the entertainment that people got from it. And so I think that's probably why when I started, it was just so not what you would regularly watch on YouTube, because it was just, you know, I'd upload a workout video and just be like, hey guys, here's a workout video. And then it would be the workout video and that would kind of be it. And so it was very much just, I didn't really understand the platform, but I was doing it out of necessity.
So all of that would be hugely impressive without also adding in the fact that you did all of this while a student, while getting a degree at Oxford. I just don't know how you manage. You must have so much energy. How did you manage to juggle doing a degree and set? Did you have one or two businesses at Oxford? I couldn't work out from the timeline.
We started the social media actually when I was working full time as an intern at IBM. And then I went to, that was just the year before uni, to earn some money for uni. Then I went to Oxford and I started, well, actually, I technically started the business before I went there, but I wouldn't have really called it a business. It was kind of one or two ebooks. And then in my first year, I kind of properly launched the ebook business and then took it to physical products in the second year of uni, whilst also starting my second business, Tala, which launched.
So BND was first.
Yeah, essentially BND was first, or Shreddy, which owns BND and which is kind of what became of the ebook business because now it's in mobile. But then I launched Tala the month before my finals, which I feel like I get a lot of praise for it, but it's outright stupidity. So,
I mean, did you sleep? Because I remember my finals, you know, kind of up at 3 a.m. trying to cram before the first paper, and I wasn't running a business then.
Yeah. I'm actually probably the way I'm very regimented and I'm very clear about, you know, well, actually this is the first, my New Year's resolution this year was having weekends. So, but even before that point.
Sorry, your New Year's resolution was to have weekends.
Yeah, I mean, it was very fun. I kind of see the businesses as my spare time when I was at uni, because also it's quite widely known that you're not allowed to have a job while you're at Oxford. And so I kind of saw it very much as my spare time. And the way I saw it is, if I don't ever give them an excuse to think that I'm not putting my all in, then they can never complain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't think I handed in a single essay late until my last year when I started being like, oh, I'm actually not going to do that essay because that's not going to help me for my exams. And then they're pretty, at this stage, you know, they know you want to do well. So they're kind of like, okay, sure. And so, I was kind of very regimented with everything. But, you know, I mean, I had I made sure I had a good uni experience as well in terms of going out and everything. I was just very, I compartmentalize things well, and I feel like I've got some quite good systems for just fitting everything in.
So have you always been like that? I mean, when you were at school, were you really driven and focused? Has this sort of come out of nowhere to all your friends and family, or are they all looking back saying, yes, we always knew Grace would do something like this because, you know, you've always been this type of person?
My family has always joked that I'm going to buy them all houses, so I'm sure that
so they have always known that.
But it's kind of, I don't think I'm definitely not being focused. I actually have extremely bad focus, which is probably why I feel like I've actually realised that that's probably one of my assets, in that, you know, I'm done is better than perfect in a lot of ways. And, you know, making sure I can delegate, all of these various different things that actually add to that type of kind of success. But I mean, I was always very busy. The schools I went to, I had always had like scholarships, which made a lot of, they were music based. So I had to do a lot of music outside of my regular kind of school time. So I've always been, and I kind of did sports and stuff as well. So it's always very much just been like, cram it all in, do everything you want to do, but also some things you like have to do, like the music stuff at school. Although I loved music, it was very much, look, you've got a scholarship, this is what you have to do. And so I feel like I am definitely quite disciplined in knowing what I have to do, and just some stuff you don't want to do it, but you have to get it over and done with.
Yeah. So how on earth do you manage to switch off? I mean, you know, you've just said your resolution was to have weekends. I guess with the whole coronavirus and, you know, everything that's happened in the last 6 months, that's all been turned on its head, has it? Or have you found it easier to switch off?
I've actually forced myself to still have weekends. Well, you know, I think my problem was that, you know, I came out of uni and I had these two businesses and I just went kind of all in. I'd work on weekends and I'd work in evenings, and that's just a recipe for burnout. And so I kind of forced myself to start having weekends, because I think it was really affecting my kind of mental health as well, because any spare 5 minutes I was like, oh, I'll just hop on my emails. Yeah. It's just not good for you. Or any time I'd be watching TV, I'd also be working, and I'd just be like, my friends would take the piss out of me a lot. I'd have this like chilled work, like, oh, I'm gonna go do some chilled work.
Which is completely different from other types of work. Yeah.
But it's kind of because it's how I did it at uni, and because I'd be doing the uni work in the day and then all the business work, which I do kind of all evening and into the early hours. And that was just how I fit things in. So I found it, I feel like time is very much like liquid, like in terms of the amount of time, you know, if you're dedicated to working a certain amount of time, you're going to fill it. Like I find myself sometimes doing, it might be a really, really quiet day because I've delegated absolutely everything and I was super busy before. And so, you know, all cancellations come through and I find myself filling time always, which is something I'm really consciously trying not to do now, because it's not always a good thing. But I mean, in terms of switching off generally, it's all about, for me, having those boundaries. So I get to the end of the day and I've always found it very hard not to just keep doing things, or being like, oh, I'll have dinner, then I'll come back to this. And now I go on a dog walk at the end of my day, and after that point, I'm banned. I've got a work phone which gets locked away.
That's interesting. So you've got two different phones, have you?
Yeah, and that's very much changed my life.
Yeah,
it's enabled me to switch off more than I ever could have imagined. Now, actually, my personal phone broke the other day, and I had to use my work phone for everything. And I was like, I think also because the businesses have grown so much, even since I got, say, my work phone. But I was on it, and I was like, how did I ever do this? How did I ever relax, or even, you know, switch off in any way, shape or form? So I feel like I've created some good boundaries now, which I absolutely did not have before.
It's interesting, because actually I've heard more and more people talking about going back to having separate phones. We've kind of been through a wave where we all had separate phones. I had a separate work and personal phone, you know, 8 years ago. And then everyone thought, let's have one all together. And of course, we've realised there's a problem with that.
Yeah. For me, it was that loads of people suggested kind of getting dual SIM, which essentially two different numbers. And I was like, but that's not the problem.
No. Yeah.
Like, the problem is me and my like concentration, what I spend my time on. So I'm much better off going, you know, having something that I can physically put away. And then it also helps to create boundaries because, you know, I've always wanted to work within my companies in a very friendly basis. I've wanted people to know that they can talk to me, and it doesn't necessarily need to be to like their direct manager or whatever it might be. But it also fostered a kind of culture where it was very easy to contact me at all times. And because I work a lot, I was then like, great, cool, I'll deal with this now. And what it helps to do as well is that it, you know, you have to set those boundaries in work as well. And it enabled me to essentially say, you know, if you have to go out of my way to contact my personal phone on the weekend or late at night or whatever it might be, then it obviously makes people think twice. Really helpful for me too, and understanding that that wasn't mean of me to do, and that wasn't like me copping out from my business, that was just a personal boundary that I needed to set, was very important for me.
Yeah. Talking about your team, I've been really interested reading your statistics that you've been posting online about diversity in your team, and I'm really conscious of the fact that we're two white women talking here, but there's been such a lot of support for Black Lives Matter and representation and inclusivity. And I was really struck when I read your post, I think it was last week or the week before, where you were talking about the fact that 50% of your management team are people of colour, 50% of your hires in the past year have been women of colour. And the one that really leapt out at me was your hired models, 40% people of colour. The fitness industry is notoriously, I think, not inclusive, has a bit of a reputation, I think, of you know, not being representative. So is it something that's always been part of your vision? Is it always something that's been important to you?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say first that like what I tried to make clear in those posts as well was it was very much so there was this movement called Pull Up for Change that was started by an amazing woman who's the founder of Aroma Beauty in the US. It was essentially saying like, you know, it was very rightly so calling out a lot of brands for posting their black squares, but actually not having anything, you know, even fine if they have it in their marketing, but then look at your teams, look at all of these different things. And what I also wanted to make clear was we're participating in that, but we're tiny teams. Like we're, you know, each company is not big. And so, you know, if I'm saying, for example, at Shreddy, it was 50% of our management team at the time, then that was also, you know, that was four people. So two and two. And I think the really, really important is making sure that that is, you know, bigger organizations is where the difference can really be made here. And I will, and you know, want to set the precedent. And I think there were definitely areas where we actually wanted to post for accountability as well, because there were certain areas where it was like, fine, these statistics look okay because, you know, we're a small company. But actually, we need, in terms of like people, it's not fine just being a percentage when it's that small. You need more input from different backgrounds and different and diversity and all of that. And I think it's always been in our marketing and always within our company too. But as I said, because we're a small company, you know, when it was like 2-3 people, obviously there were certain areas where we were like, oh, if you just look at this team, if it's 2-3 people, then the diversity is awful. And that's something we have to always look at and have since we started. But we've made sure that especially in our marketing, it has always been the case. And I think that's been when we started Tala specifically, we did like 9 posts on the grid to populate the feed when we publicized the account. And one of them was, we are inclusive. And we just wanted to make it very clear, because the fashion and especially the fitness industry are categorically awful when it comes to diversity. And I remember working with brands, and I have for a while now specified I've been asked to be on diversity panels before, and I've said, okay, I'll accept once you can confirm that you've got at least 50% women of color on the panel. If it's like 4 or people of color, if it's 4 people on the panel, then I will not be on a panel with more than 2 white people. Or, you know, even at that point, it's like it's a diversity panel. Like, come on, this is the one situation. Yeah. Well, when you especially cannot make that exception. And then I've had to pull out because they've said they can't even fulfill that. And then, you know, there have been all of these various things where, you know, I make sure if it's a branded trip that it's going to be, it's not going to just be all white people and all of these various things. And it was just so, I mean, it wouldn't have affected me at all. And yet it was so clear to see how archaic a lot of these kind of views are, and actually just the not seeing the importance of instating those values. And I think that that was one of the things that actually when we were conceptualizing Tala and writing down what do we want and what do we think is different within the industry, having worked with a lot of activewear brands before and had to literally say like, hey guys, I'm actually, you know, you need to stop whitewashing your feed or you need to do whatever this is. And brands being like, oh yeah, we'll look into that because that's what people want now. And being like, oh no, probably not because that's what people want now, probably because that's the right thing to do. And you never want someone to come on your page and think like, oh, I'm not welcome here. And that's what we wanted from the off. So we've made sure that in every shoot ever, there is always an equal distribution. And often we shoot with three people because we, on our site, we have three different model sizes for all clothes. So that means that it obviously can't be 50-50 because it's three, but we've made sure that then we alternate from two and one to one and two and all of that, if that kind of makes sense. I feel like lots of people have then said, you know, at certain points being like, oh, but then if you're putting so much concentration on it, then surely it takes away from the fact. And actually the thing is that these are systemic issues. So you can actually fight them is by properly fighting them rather than being like, oh, we're doing our best. If you're not doing your best, you're not doing your best. And doing your best in a systemic problem has to be consciously changing things. So it's always been innately part of the brand, and that's what we've tried to do. But actually one of the most surprising things has been how much we were praised even from the off.
Yeah, so I noticed you said that in one of your interviews, you were really surprised that it was a big deal.
Yeah, and we never, like, the one time we said we are inclusive was at the beginning when we were setting out our brand values, and that was important for us to be held accountable and to say who we were as a brand. And then from that point forward, we've never been like, oh, look at us, all inclusive, all diverse, because we kind of...
You just take it as read. Yeah.
Yeah. It's meant to be it's meant to be kind of a guarantee, a norm, and you've got to make it like that. But then the amount of people who've just been like, wow, like that's amazing, that's incredible. It's like, it's really not incredible, it's just everyone else really bad. And so that's been something that we've tried to do well. But also I think it's one of those things where I, as a white person, am then praised for that, and then you look at the, you know, some black owned brands that have been doing that for however, like it's just, yeah, I mean it's riddled with different layers, but I think that, you know, we hopefully do our best at all stages, and where we haven't done our best, we are always doing, like, looking to do better.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And you say, you know, when you're talking about 50% people of colour, when there's only four of you, that's not a big deal. But actually, you've got a million followers on Instagram. So you are very visibly making, you know, that inclusivity statement to all those people. You know, I kind of feel the fact that there's only four people actually, you know, you're playing down the importance, actually, I think, or the impact. Sorry, that's the word I mean. You're playing down the impact of what you can.
And that's why we actually were debating whether to post, because we were kind of like, is that even representative, or is this something that we should, you know, be talking about, when actually we'll probably get more praise for it than we possibly should, because, you know, it's actually a small amount of people, and then all of these things. And then we were thinking, like, hey, if I'm posting that, then hopefully also all the brands I work with will start to think. And, you know, we made a point of reaching out to all the brands we kind of work with and all of that, and say, hey, this is what we'll now be looking for, and kind of further to what I'd, you know, already done. That's why we wanted to do it, as we were kind of like, okay, even if there are certain areas we can do better, or this has to be, you know, it says nothing until we actually carry this out for, you know, as we grow the business, we realized that it was actually something important to talk about regardless.
So talking about kind of the impact of what you do and reactions to what you do, I'm really interested in your personal experience of being a woman online. I mean, every woman I interview says they've had bad experiences, trolling, stalking. I've been reading, actually, I was reading, I think, a tweet you posted only about an hour ago today, where you were urging people on Twitter not to kind of to think before they engaged and not be so argumentative all the time. And then there was something else I saw on Instagram where you'd taken your dog out in the sun and you said, oh, before anyone has a go, I was very careful about the dog in the heat. And I thought, gosh, there's so much you have to think all the time.
Disclaimers are usually for my kind of my, I think the thing is that I'm very, very conscious of all of these things. And I actually, knowing that I'm actually, you know, really quite liberal in my views, and I actually always think of things in a sort of debated way, as in, you know, I'd probably be a great PR manager. The fact that, you know, I have always thought of things in all different, before I put a tweet out or before I put something out, you know, I've always thought, hey, could this be offensive?
That's fire. Yeah, it'll be offensive. Yeah.
And when people choose to argue with me, it's like, really? Like, I feel like a lot of the time people, and that's not me being like, oh, because I'm always right. It's because it's genuinely, if there's something I've then got wrong, I'll be very happy to discuss it, because the way I see it is not a kind of calling out, or, you know, there are certain things that should absolutely be called out, but usually I'll have got them before, you know, they ever fester in kind of my brain. And so it's kind of, usually for me then it's like, but you know how, even just how, like, even if you want to put it this way, like how PC I am. So when you're arguing with me, please assume that I have given as much thought as possible.
Yeah.
If not, and if I am being ignorant, or if I am being whatever it might be, then I will change my view and I will have an adult discussion with you and, like, and be like, great, cool, let's move on. I've learned, let's move forward. And I think that what is often the problem then is it's very much based on the kind of, it's wanting to catch people out, and it's been like, okay, but I've made it very, very happy to discuss anything here. So as long as I'm not being problematic and bigoted, then in which case completely call me out. Like if I'm racist or whatever it might be, then go ahead. But I think when it's people looking for things in smaller issues, and it's like, no, you're committed to misunderstanding me at this stage. Because if you say, hey, I like to clarify, do you mean this? Then let's have a conversation about it. I love conversation. I love talking about difficult things because I don't really have anything to hide. But I think the thing is with social media is it's often people want to misunderstand.
There are people just spoiling for fights, I think, particularly on Twitter, aren't there? It's not about logic. It's not about actually thinking through an argument. They just want to get a reaction.
Yeah, and I'll happily sit here and have a discussion with you like I would with anyone. So let's have a discussion. Let's not, you know, make this about like he said, she said, I'm gonna have an argument with you like I'm in the school playground, or just because I want a question. Let's address this like adults who have brains, please.
So have you had any bad experiences that have made you think, oh, you know, why am I doing this? I don't want to get involved anymore.
The more I've been on social media, the more I've just realized that I think, for example, like the thing I tweeted today being like, you can tell this tweet is not problematic if you read it, how it was like as in it was very clearly a conceptual tweet, as in probably people are going to be listening and being like, God, what does she tweet?
What was the tweet about? Yeah, it was about the way the economy worked, wasn't it? Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting. Yes. And I read the thread and I thought, I can't understand what the problem with this is.
Yesterday, and I was thinking, like, God, there are really people who are really at the top of their fields, and there are people that are at the top of fields that never existed 10 years ago. And then I was thinking, like, God, isn't it crazy that we're all like, we all have different specialisms.
Yeah. And we all come together. Yeah.
We all come together in this one big, like, capitalist wheel. And then I kind of tweeted it, and people were like, everyone doesn't have jobs. And I'm like, oh, yes. I'm fully, and I was talking about, like, division of labor. Like, it wasn't really, the old Adam Smith back in the day, like this wasn't my economic kind of discovery here, but what I was then, it was more just like a, God, isn't that weird when you really think about it? And then people being like, you know, read the room, not everyone has a job, and being like, okay, well, I was talking about labor, and they were being like, well, yeah, labor, not everyone's in labor. I was like, yeah, but if you're in the labor force, that's literally how employment statistics work. Mm-hmm. As in, you're unemployed, you're still in the labor force, because it, and so I was kind of just like, interesting. and so I think with things like that, it's kind of, I used to be very much like, oh, I'll just delete the tweet because I never want people to see me as someone who wouldn't think about those things. But then actually I've got quite a lot of confidence in, like, and kind of conviction in who I am and what I believe, and that I am a good person, that I think of all of these different things, and therefore that I have nothing to hide, as in about a lot of kind of difficult things to talk about. If I kind of go on the PR side and just don't want to talk about anything because I don't want to get it wrong, then I haven't thought about it enough, and I haven't read about it enough, and I haven't educated myself on it enough. So, like, let's talk about it. And then we can discuss these things as humans. Whereas I think a lot of the time things have got very kind of, like, there's a kind of dichotomy between right and wrong, and you're either on one side or the other, and you have to make which one you're on. And I'm like, well, then I just won't say anything, and that's not no fun at all, is it? So let's learn to all coexist, and also let's invite discussion without kind of just
invite it descending into us all shouting at each other.
Yeah. And then it's like, no one was really that argumentative, like, and I don't think it really got out of control. It's like, well, if no one was argumentative, then we wouldn't still be here arguing about whether it was argumentative or not. Surely not. Surely you haven't come back to say that. But I think that I've, on the whole, actually been incredibly lucky with my experiences. And I think that, you know, I've never been in kind of tabloid culture. You know, I've never been on reality TV or anything like that, that kind of often puts you in that position. So I've been very lucky to have kind of people find me who are probably in this kind of echo chamber of people going to find me. And therefore, of course, there are people who are committed to misunderstanding me, or who just don't like me, like, which is absolutely fine. Like, I'm not put on this earth for anyone else to like me. And so I think that actually, you know, I've been very, very lucky in all of those different ways. And of course, there's been trolling. I mean, I'm sure if I probably looked in my DMs now, there would be various different things about kind of appearance, what I've chosen to do with my career, how legit.
I was going to ask you about that, actually, the appearance thing. I wonder if, and reading through some of your interviews and posts, do you think it's harder than it was, you know, to be a woman in business than it was, say, 20 or 30 years ago because of that visibility? I mean, women in business have always had their appearance criticised, but they've not been as visible as they are now.
The visibility is something, and I think it also means that because of the difference in the visibility between now and then, it's also seen as impossible. So I've also obviously had a lot of questions about kind of legitimacy, and isn't it other people who actually do this behind the scenes, and like, you're just the face of the business. And it's like, okay, but I mean, you can see my education background, you can see what I've done with this. What's different as well is I'll speak about this in this way now, whereas probably about even 6 months ago, I would have kind of conceded that and said, yeah, well, obviously, you know, I've been so lucky and all of these various things. And I have 100%. I've been incredibly privileged and lucky in so many different ways. But what I'm trying to get more confident about is actually understanding what does back me up in my legitimacy, and not letting kind of imposter syndrome speak when people who also have kind of imposter syndrome about me, or doubts about me and my legitimacy, and kind of enforcing those views. So I've tried to be quite committed now to being able to back myself, because I think especially as women, you know, when it comes to things like money and shouting about our own success,
it still doesn't happen enough.
Yeah. It feels actually like physically painful doing it.
Yeah, I actually read some really depressing research the other day that the more men become successful and talk about their success, the more likable they are, and the more women become successful and talk about their success, the more disliked they are.
Well, exactly. And it's actually quite funny, because I think that, you know, my business, what's great is that my business isn't necessarily affected by that. And for example, like my content on social media, I've been incredibly lucky. Like my most liked photos ever are kind of like my Oxford graduation, my Forbes thing, you know, like various different things that I've been very lucky to have people actually support the life side of things rather than just kind of the looks and all of that. But I mean, it goes without saying, the most liked stuff is always still, you know, very based on kind of looks. And so I think that it is very much I feel like it's hard to push myself in that direction to be talking more about these types of things, because I know that it decreases my likability. But then I'm kind of like, you know, and you notice it in yourself as well. You notice when you hear women speaking about their success, you're kind of like, oh, she sounds very full of herself.
Yes.
Well, she's probably trying to sound full of herself, right?
Yeah, she's propping herself up, isn't she, internally? I always think that, yeah.
Doing that for herself, which is like where I am now, and kind of being like, right, well, I'm just going to talk about it. And I've actually realised that even if people potentially like me less, you know, I get more work and more recognition. So not here to be liked. I hope at least that more of my kind of normal posting stuff, you know, still posting regardless of what I'm doing, so it's not just saying like, I am a businesswoman, I do this. I think a lot of when I was doing that, it was for my own validation and for my own thing that's what I did. So I think, yeah, I think I've kind of come into my own a bit more with all of that.
I think you should keep on doing exactly what you're doing, Grace, because I think your message that you can be a successful entrepreneur, an incredibly successful female entrepreneur, and still look great, be a young woman out having fun with your friends, having a normal life, you know, I think that's a very strong message actually to give to other women and girls.
Thank you, that means a lot. I feel I'm actually consciously trying now. I think I went through a big, like a kind of middle stage of being like, either maybe I'll go behind the scenes a bit more, so my legitimacy is kind of, people know I'm legitimate because I'm doing it all in silence. And then I went through a kind of like, oh, well, maybe I'll just like be at the forefront, but I'll act as an influencer, so people don't kind of, you know, that success and dislike thing. And now I'm just kind of being like, hey, like what's wrong with me literally just posting what I want to post, being able to be putting out silly tweets and it not going against the fact that I know business, you know, being able to just be a human being. And I think that it, probably quite my like duty, and anyone in my position's duty, to be enforcing those quite uncomfortable realities and just being like, hey, you can be this and this, and you'll probably see me as one when you see one post and then as a different one when you see another post, but at least you're seeing both those two things. But I think we need to stop being so concerned that people aren't going to take us seriously for being, especially for being women who live our lives. And know, like all of these various different aspects that come into that.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of young girls, as I said, looking at you and being very inspired by that.
That would make me very happy.
So I don't want to take up any more of your time, because you are running multi-million pound businesses and you need to get back to them before you have your break for the evening. But there are three questions that I ask everyone at the end of the podcast. So I just want to end up with those. So, you know, we are a podcast about tech habits. We've talked a lot about your relationship with the digital world. I was wondering if there was one message that you'd like to get over to everyone listening about their kind of tech or digital or phone or social media habits, about their relationship with the digital world.
Well, my one I kind of mentioned before, if you have a really busy job and you work on WhatsApp, get two phones.
that's such a good one.
Because I think that actually, if you're not working on something like Slack and you are using WhatsApp, which we do, then you're never going to be able to fully live your life. But also, I feel like it is important to say that, you know, there is an element of not balance at some points, and that is fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're often shamed into this idea of kind of balance and self-care, when actually sometimes the best form of self-care is like being productive, you know, your career at that time or whatever you, and like not to be shamed into that, sorry, slight side note.
No, I agree with you. Yeah.
And then I'd say my other one is just make sure you're not following people that don't make you feel good about yourself. And that is not, I think that's quite a classic one, but obviously don't follow people who make you feel bad about, you know, how you look or what you're doing with your life, but also don't follow people you dislike. Yeah. Because that's going to make you angry. It's the same with, like, you know, if people dislike me, I just really, it's best for both of us if you just don't follow me. It's, you know, everyone is a person and no one was put here for you to like them or them to like you. So just move away from that and get that kind of peace back and that control over what you are seeing. Follow people who do what you do. Follow people who like what you like. And I think one other thing I'd just say is care about what matters and look out for social causes as well, because you know, there, I mean, I think a lot of social media is taken up by things like fast fashion and other things that are ruining the world, and social media is a great mover for social justice when it's employed properly. So there's a lot of stuff you should care about, so make sure you also put that type of stuff on your feed too.
Yeah, we've seen exactly that, haven't we, in the last few weeks with Black Lives Matter, and we saw that with Me Too.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, completely agree with you about that. Okay, final question. What have you learned about yourself from your relationship with tech and digital over the last, in your so far short life so far, Grace, over the last 3 years, 4 years, any period since you've been, you know, since your first post on Instagram, what do you think you've learned about yourself?
Oh, God. I've probably learned that I actually like tech a lot less than I think I do.
Oh, interesting. I didn't expect you to say that.
Yeah, well, no, I just think that, yeah, I think it's very much kind of like, I think that you grow up and you develop these habits, and one of the ones that me and my generation grew up and developed was very much about kind of, you know, the way you use social media and all of these various different things, and we weren't necessarily given the, or, you know, we were given it, but didn't necessarily have the opportunity to decide that that wasn't how we wanted to spend our time or whatever. It's a very like culture-based thing, and I think that growing up and being like, oh well, I actually don't need to use my phone in that way, or I don't need to follow that or do that or whatever, and learning that has, or kind of unlearning a lot of things, has been very helpful for me.
Kind of fits with your overall philosophy, doesn't it, that actually you don't have to follow a particular path, you can carve out your own path and your own way of doing it and your own way of using it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Grace, thank you so much. I have absolutely loved our chat. I've taken up far too much of your time, because actually I could have carried on talking to you for at least another half an hour.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely to speak.
Yeah, it's been absolutely brilliant.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us, and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.